Guys, welcome back to Tribe of Unicorns. I'm Kendra Beavis, and I am sitting with Pam Campbell today. How are you?
Excited. First of all, thanks for having me. Should we tell a little bit of the backstory? We've been trying to like do this for such a long time. We
met at
Gabby Bernstein's conference. What was that, 2 years ago?
I think so. It was a, I think it was just a year ago because I just saw pictures come up in my my remembering feed.
But I remember she was on the mind.
Was it a book launch?
No, it was a conference. She came to New York City finally to do one of her workshops, and we were on the line waiting for the restroom.
Right?
I have a podcast. You should be on it. I was like, yes.
You told me your story, and I was like, holy cow! Like everyone needs to hear this. You're amazing. Yeah. So, bathroom connections.
And divine timing, because I was like, every time there was like a roadblock, I was like, it'll happen in divine timing. And here we are.
Yes, I wasn't worried. I knew it would work out. So why don't you tell us what you do?
I am very passionate about self-development. Transformation is my jam. I'm a transformational life coach. I'm a motivational speaker, author, and foster care advocate. I like to consider myself a spiritual catalyst for transformation. I support individuals in supporting them to heal, grow, and to self-develop on their journey of spirituality. And that can look so many different ways, from limiting beliefs to worthiness, self-love, figuring out what are the blocks and limiting beliefs that you are operating from. Because here's the thing, I get it. You know, we all have dreams and we all have desires and we don't know what we don't know, right?
Yeah.
We have blind spots. So at the end of the day, that's where I come in to hold space to guide you in really moving past these blocks and having these ahas. I love when clients are like, that's what that was. I'm like, yes. My belief is breakdown comes breakthrough. And it is a beautiful thing. And I know sometimes there's a resistance in being in the breakdown, but that is where all the juiciness will come because you will be able to get to that breakthrough so much easier with peace, ease, and grace, you know?
Yeah. So can you fill us in on your backstory? Because how did you get to this place in your life? Your story is incredible. So
thank you. It is so funny because I actually wanted to be an attorney, but I'll get to that in a minute. I was born in the Ivory Coast. And in the Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire. I was brought to the States at the age of two my parents wanted the American dream for me. They wanted me to have what they didn't have. Unfortunately, at the age of six, this American dream turned into a nightmare. I started to experience both emotional and physical abuse at the hands of my dad. It was so bad, by the time I was 13, I attempted suicide. I didn't want to be here. My dad didn't see me. I felt invisible. So for me, it was like, why even be here? I was unsuccessful doing that. And so I was okay with just waiting for my dad to just finally just take my life. So I felt like dead man walking. But 13, growing older, it was just a matter of time. Because he had always threatened that he would take my life, how I was a bad child, I wasn't listening. It was just a lot of rage and anger. And so when I was 16, he tried to make good on that promise. I remember breaking down to a teacher, a math teacher. I gotten a 76 on my math exam. And I knew when I got my father was going to beat me. And so I confided in the teacher and he said, don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. And I begged him to keep my secret because this has been a secret my whole life, right? And so I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
Go home after picking up my sister from school, and there's a message on the answering machine. It's Children's Services. And they're like, we have a message about a complaint about child abuse. And in my heart started pounding, but there was also peace because I knew that when he heard it, that he was finally going to kill me. And so I remember feeding my sister, putting her to bed, me going to bed, and waiting until the next morning until he would approach me about that message. And so I wake up to the sound of my father's voice inviting me into the living room. And I knew, I was like, this is it. This is finally going to be put out of my misery. And I go into the living room and he asks me, he said, well, I got a message from Children's Services. Have you been speaking to someone? I said, no. Have you been telling them what's going on here? I said, no. And he began punching me, slapping me, kicking me until I was finally, my back was against a wall. And he's hitting me. He keeps asking me. And I felt like he was trying to beat the truth out of me. And I remember as he was choking me and I felt like the life was coming out of me, I could see my sister, who was 8 at the time. I was 16. I could see her watching us from the corner of my eye. And to this day, I feel like that was what gave me the strength to be like, no, this man can't kill me. Like, I got to get us out of here. We got to get out of here. And I remember he finally did stop. And he said, well, you know what? I'm going to look into this. And if you're lying to me when you come home, I'm going to kill you. And I said, okay. He let us go. I took my sister, I took her to school. I ran into that professor's class and I was like, you just put me 6 feet under the ground. He was like, calm down. I was like, calm down. I mean, I was like screaming, yelling. I was like afraid. And I was like, I'm not going home. You got to figure out something. And for whatever reason, children's services didn't come out to the schools back in the day. But they did that day. I made a request. I was like, you got to figure out something. So they were like, okay, we're going to call children's services. I wasn't even really familiar with foster care. Mm-hmm. I remember at that time, he did threaten the little information I did know about foster care. He was like, I'm going to make sure you go into a bad home or something. My father was just always using fear to manipulate me. And so I was like, foster care. My dad said, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, that's the only option I have right now. And so I remember that the caseworker came to the school. She picked me up and I was like, I'm not leaving without my sister. We have to go get her. And so we went to her school and I was like, oh, you know, she has a dentist appointment. No need to call my dad. He knows I'm here. I'm just going to just grab my sister. They were like, okay. Because he was beating her too. And they knew it and they were afraid of him. So they knew what the deal was. So they gladly passed her over to me. We got in a cab. We went to this group home downtown. And I remember they were like, you know, we have to notify your dad that you're in our custody. I was like, oh my God. Cause in my mind, this is the farthest I've ever gotten as far as escape. And so I was like, okay. So they call and I can hear him screaming and yelling, come back home. And this woman passes the phone. She was like, he wants to talk to you. And my heart just started beating so fast. And she said, I wish I like stayed in contact with her because these next words literally saved my life. She said, you don't have to speak to him if you don't want to. She gave me a choice. Wow. And I was like, I don't want to. She was like, okay. And I remember we stayed in that group home that evening. My sister and I don't have the same mother. So we were trying to get in contact to let her mother know what was going on. And by that Sunday evening, they had finally found us a home in Queens. So something about the foster care system, nobody wants teens. They were trying to split my sister and I. I was 16, she was 8, and I was like, we're a package deal. You're not splitting us up. This is not an option here, which is why it took so long to find a home that would take both of us. So that Sunday, I remember it was like 11 o'clock or midnight, and we get dropped off at this home in Queens. This woman comes out, and she has these big glasses and these like triangle nails, and she's like, I'm Miss McCarter. Welcome to my home. I was like, okay. We go. My sister and I, there was a bunk bed downstairs, but we slept together in the bottom bunk. And about maybe a week later, she went to go live with her biological mother. And for whatever reason, in my spirit, I was like, I'm just supposed to be in foster care. Because her mother was like, you could come too. You're my daughter. I love you. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what this feeling is, but I'm supposed to go through the system. I didn't know why. I didn't know at the time. It was like an inner knowing. That was part of my journey. And so I entered the system at age 16. I aged out at 21. I had two amazing foster homes. And there was still trauma though, right? My second foster mother was emotionally constipated. She was not in tune with her emotions. I wasn't allowed to be with my emotions, right? But she loved me fiercely and she protected me fiercely and she treated me as her own, right? Which is why we call her Aunt Pumpkin, because according to the world, I'm her niece. It's none of their business that I was the foster child, right? Which meant so much to me. I aged out at 21 and the struggle was real. I was drinking. I was trying to run from my pain. I did not want to deal with the 10 years of abuse and unworthiness and not feeling seen or heard, because it hurt, right? So I finally got, I got my first apartment in the Bronx on the concourse. I was so grateful, because a lot of kids that age out, they end up homeless. That wasn't my story though. I had a huge apartment, which ended up being like Club Pam, Party City. It was so big. A lot of my friends at the time lived in the Bronx. I was going to John Jay College because I wanted to be an attorney. I wanted to be the Marsha Clark of foster care. I wanted to lock up people who did what my dad did to me. That's where my mindset was at. All of my achievements were, my anger was the driving force, whether it was interning for Hillary Clinton, graduating John Jay, other achievements that I created. It was like, I'm going to show him I'm not stupid and dumb like he told me for 10 years, you know? You know, God had other plans. About, I think I was 22 or 23. I took on, I feel like God was speaking to me through my dreams. I was having these vivid dreams about my biological mother who left when I was 5. I came home from a play date and was told that she no longer loved me and went back to the Ivory Coast where I was born. I was like, and I carried that guilt. Like, what did I do that she left? Right. And so hence where my abandonment issues had started. Right. And God was like, no, it's time for you to find her and like get the truth. I was having vivid dreams about her. I would literally be crying in my sleep, wake up with tears because I hated her. My God, there was so much anger around her. And I felt like this was the time to deal with that. I was experiencing what felt like a mental breakdown, literally. Like I was like, it was just time to take a break. And for me, it was like a break. I was raised to be a perfectionist. There's no break here. Like, you know what I'm saying? These kids need me because I'm a martyr. You know what I mean? And God was like, no. And God works in mysterious ways. Because I remember there was a Fordham Law student that came to do a presentation. I was like, oh, Fordham Law. Okay, I'm going to make this connection, da da da. He wasn't there for no connection, girl. He actually led me to my first therapist.
Really?
It's a wild story. So we met, and I remember him saying, your story is very powerful. You know, have you ever actually sat and spoke to somebody? I was like, about what? He's like,
I'm good, I got this.
And he, but the fact that but he didn't know me and said that, that's what caught my attention. And I also know the universe will give you what you want through the path of least resistance. I already had the interest in meeting with him, right? For one reason, but it's leading me to something else. So he gave me a card and he was like, well, my mom works for the city, New York sanitation, and she may be able to support you. I was like, I said, you know what? Okay, let me humor him. I get the card. I go downtown and I'm looking for his mother. This gentleman is there. And I said, well, I'm looking for so-and-so. He was like, well, why are you looking for her? I was like, well, I think she can connect me to a psychotherapist or something. He was like, a therapist? And I said, yes. And he was like, oh, she's not here. He gives me the card and information to who would eventually be my first therapist. It took me 4 days to finally have the courage to call this woman. I call her, I make an appointment. And she lived on Lexington Avenue near 86th Street. And I remember she would conduct sessions in her home. And when I went, the minute I stepped foot in her home, I knew I was supposed to be there. And she also she protected me fiercely around how I was operating, the things that I was running from. She was helping me get through day to day, just surviving day to day. And then I remember also at the same time, my aunt, my father's sister, helping me take on the search for my biological mother. I mean, I wrote Oprah. I was writing everybody and anybody that could help me find my biological mother. And I did. I finally did. I did find her. She was in the Ivory Coast. My family at the time said that they would support her, take care of her while I was, you know, finishing my studies. In 2010, her mother, my grandmother, fell ill, and my mother went back to drinking. And unfortunately, that led to a lot of behavior that just was dangerous. We lost contact. And then when we found word that she had been found, unfortunately, she had passed away. And that was devastating to me on so many levels. I remember getting the news from all people. My dad called. It was very crass in his delivery, because when I was told that they had found her, I was told that she was in a coma. It's like, oh, she's in a coma. It's okay. We're gonna pray. It's gonna be fine. This, she's gonna get through this. I didn't know my aunt had lied to me. She was trying to ease the blow. So she wasn't in a coma. She had already passed away. So my dad called and he's like, oh, my condolences. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, your mother's dead. And I was like, what? Why would you say that? She's in a coma. And he's like, that's not what I was told. My condolences. And he hangs up. And literally in the next minute, my aunt calls. It was as if she knew. And I was like, dad just called. Is it true? She was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, she was like, and let me be clear. In our culture, it's like, be strong. Don't cry. But I'm like, I've done all this transformation and work. Girl, I'm going to have me a good cry. So I was like, yeah. I need to cry. I hung up the phone and I remember crying for every inner child that was like connected to her. Like my 5-year-old that was told she left because she no longer loved me. My 6-year-old who started to experience the abuse. The 8-year-old that was taken to the Ivory Coast to see her again and came back to the States without her again. The 16-year-old that had to survive in foster care and couldn't understand why the city and the state of New York were now my parents. I cried for, it was like a deep cry for each of those inner children. And then the next minute, it was like, everything was happening so fast. I'm trying to figure out visa. I got to get to the Ivory Coast. For me, it had been 20 something years since I had been back home. And it was very important for me to honor her. Mm-hmm. To say goodbye, even though I could have done that here, because a lot of friends were like, oh, it's dangerous. And there was some danger because my mom pissed off a lot of people. People had this notion, you're American, so they think we're rich. It wasn't a safe circumstances at the time. I will say that. I didn't care because I had love in my heart and I wanted to go back to where my story began. Oh. And so I did. I went back. I went to what would be considered like, it's like a cornfield. This is where bodies are buried. It was just very eye-opening to see the lifestyle, how people live over there, and how I want to contribute one day, right? And it was funny because I met a lot of people who knew her. And if you saw her, I looked just like her, like twins. Some people were like, one person fainted. I was like, I am her daughter. I am not the ghost of my mother. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the anger, the pain, this all led to me doing self-development work in about 2011. This powerful workshop that just changed my life. I didn't realize that I was choosing anger. I'm like, what do you know? That's a choice. And I just needed more. And more and more and more and more and more and more and more. And I realized I was like, I have a story. I get to share my story. But I had so much shame I had to work through.
Yeah.
And in that sense, and you know, I was like, oh, I'm a coach. I've been a coach this, because it's wild. People would always come to me for advice when I was young. And I'm like, I'm the one in foster care. You should be helping me, right? But I didn't realize I've been coaching my whole life. And it is one of my natural gifts, of course, that I, you know, perfected, crafted. But it's part of who I am. Yeah. And I love coaching individuals in like what they don't know and moving forward. And so with the self-development course I took, it led me on this path of like, I don't belong in corporate America. Right. I was at a firm. I'd been there 16 years. I learned and like grew immensely there. I'm so grateful for that experience. In 2018, Spirit was like, it's time to go. It's time to go. And I did. It was bittersweet. I took a year off, be in nature, hug trees. In 2019, I started my business, Pamela J. Campbell LLC. I was like, I'm a speaker, I'm a coach, I'm a writer, I'm an author. This is the new identity, right?
Yes.
Then, of course, COVID hit in 2020. I had all these plans. I was like speaking on panels, and then COVID. But I'll be honest, 2020 was one of the best years of my life. I was like, yes, this is my time to go in and do my inner work, because when we get through this, people are going to need support, and I want to serve. And the best way for me to be in service is to serve me first. So I was upstate, I was in nature, I was doing different like ayahuasca ceremonies, like whatever it was, I was like, bring it. And I moved 2 weeks before the pandemic. I moved to this apartment in the Bronx, no, not in the Bronx, in Washington Heights. And it was funny because the landlord was kind of shady, but he ended up being like one of my best spiritual teachers. I was supposed to live in that apartment during the length of the pandemic.
Yeah.
My spirituality grew. My relationship with my mother on the other side grew. That's when I started a relationship with her on the other side, because I finally let go of the guilt of being, of wasting so much time of being angry with her, right? And then after I worked through what I needed to at that time, I created this beautiful home. I live by the water in this brownstone that brings me peace and joy and safety, something that I didn't think I was worthy of, right? You know, people don't look like me over here. Oh, I can't afford this. It's all limiting beliefs that we tell ourselves based on our past experiences. And so I sit here today with much gratitude, knowing that I am being used to be of service to people who have had a similar experience. And man, if I can do it, man, anybody can.
I mean, gosh, what a crazy story. I mean, and you are so beautiful and so inspiring, and you just seem like, even, you know, the minutes that we spent together on the line in the bathroom, like you exude this beautiful, happy, healthy soul. I'm so excited for everyone to hear this and hear your story, because I think there's power in us telling our stories, because in your story, someone else is picking up, oh, that's my story too. And look at her. She's gotten to the other side of something. And if she did it, I can do it. Because that's why we tell these stories. We, to our younger selves, give this energy back to her who needed it then. And hopefully the next person who is unfortunately in shoes like that can hear this and get the power they need to make the choice not to pick up the phone and talk to their father, or to leave the law firm and take a chance on themselves and do the work. Like, it's hard. It's not easy to uncover all this stuff that's been sitting there for so long. And you think, okay, I'm just going to put that there and it's fine. And then you almost forget about it. And then it kind of comes up subconsciously. And then you're like, why am I not charging what I need to charge? Why do I feel like I don't have the authority to speak in this space? And then you realize, like, oh, it's that little thing down there that I haven't dealt with. So
it's like,
I applaud you for all of it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words. Because it's, once there was a time where I couldn't receive that. So I'm grateful for that in this moment. And to be in this space of like, yes, I've done work and I'm continuing to do the work. And that's
it
okay.
Rains. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like an onion. It's different layers.
Yeah.
You're peeling different layers.
I've found that it's almost, I don't want to say fun and make it seem, you know, not important, but there's an interesting part that I find almost exciting when I kind of when I unwrap a new layer. And it's like, because I always, at this point now, I know when I find a block or something that I have to unwrap or and deal with, I know that I'm going to, and I know I'm going to reach a new level. So it's almost like, oh, what what are we going to do with this?
Yes, exactly.
Who are we going to become now?
I get that. That resonates. It's like, okay, yes. And here's the thing. That's also a choice. Like, people get to know that it doesn't have to be daunting and scary. It can really be light as we allow it to be, right?
Yeah.
It could be exciting. It's like, okay, this is just information. For me, I hold feedback as just information, not right, not wrong. It's just information, and I have the choice to do something with it or not. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to accept everything that everyone says. And one of the things that I was looking at on your beautiful YouTube channel, you had a video about labels. And I thought that was so interesting because when you're coming out of, you know, a transformational space, when you're trying to go from A to B, you're in this weird like middle place. And so like for me, when I was a single mom, pregnant with my second child, and all the labels started like falling on my head, like I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. And I realized like, actually, I made an amazing choice for my family. I feel strong and happy, and I don't have to take any of those labels on myself.
Amen.
And I love the little exercise you did with replacing those labels with something more empowering. Can you speak to that a little bit?
So if memory serves me, I think I had just done this project around labels, because I remember I didn't realize that I was accepting the labels that society had placed upon me, right? And so, and it was disempowering labels at that.
Yeah.
And so like whether we're conscious, on a conscious or unconscious level, we are taking on labels from other people, right? For example, with foster care, you know, teenagers, they're difficult. They don't listen. It was like all this stuff. And I'm like, you haven't even met me.
Yeah, right.
And so I remember doing this project, and the invitation was to take the labels that we've taken on for ourselves and use empowering labels. So instead of labels like, trying to think of some of the ones that I used to take on, lazy or unkind, it's more like, no, I'm empowered, I'm light, I'm powerful, I'm love, right? I'm gonna say something about yourself, let it be positive, for crying out loud. You know what I mean? And I can see how it's very easy to get caught up in the norms of society, because I mean, everybody's doing it. So it's like, why not? But no, you're not everybody, right? God made you uniquely different from everyone for a reason. And so you get, and that right there is your superpower, that you're different. And so you get to move differently because your superpower is you're different. You like different things. You want different things. You get to be different and be you inside of that. That's what brings this world together. The fact that we all have different gifts. We all like different things. We all see the world differently. That is the magic. The fact that we're all different, not the same.
Right.
And it can be hard going against the grain. Because, you know, when I was in corporate, there were times where it was like, oh, Pam's crazy. Like, it's that woo stuff. And it's like, oh, and then, you know, you got to forgive people who don't know what they don't know.
Right. They're only where they are at.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People with the tools that they have at their level of consciousness. You can't be mad at that.
Do you think you could have gotten to where you were today without releasing labels, without releasing anger? It just seems like if you are trying to reach a new place in your life, you always kind of have to go inside first, right?
Absolutely. So there's a saying, I'm just using it as an example. I'm not like fond of it, but there's this saying of like new level, new devil, right? And so here's the thing. I've learned in my experience, when you are looking to continue to expand, to continue to be your highest self and raise level of consciousness, there's always going to be something. Something's waiting for you. Something's waiting for you. Like right now, my intention is, as far as prosperity, is hitting that $1 million mark. The end goal is $1.2 billion for me, so I can create impact in the world, everywhere in the world, not just here, right? So the end goal is $1.2 billion. There are going to be different things I know waiting for me at each level as I am elevating to get to that goal.
Yep.
And that's okay. The people who think, oh, but I've hit the goal, I'm good, I've done the work, no more. Psych!
I'm done.
I'm done. There's no done.
Exactly. No. And how boring would it be if you were done?
That's true. That is true. That's a good point.
I love the discovery. I love figure, like, especially looking back now and being like, all the trauma and things that I went through in my life, I needed that to become who I am today. And the future things that I'm going to have to go through will even, you know, make me stronger, make me more insightful, make me a better mother, business owner, person. I look at all those challenges that I've already experienced as proof that in moving forward, whatever comes my way, it's happening for me. As terrible or hard as it might be, I know I can get through it because I've already gotten through all this other stuff. And it made me better.
Exactly. I truly believe if God has brought you to it, he will bring you through it. Right.
That.
And
wait, you got to say that again, because this has to be a social clip.
If God brought you to it, God will bring you through it. And I remember someone saying that to me when I was in foster care. I was like, but damn, this is a lot. And the reminder of like, we are stronger than we think. We're stronger than we think. Because if you couldn't get through it, it wouldn't be in your space. And I think there is this, I don't know, there's like this notion around healing. I've healed, I'm done, I've arrived. No, healing is a journey, not a destination. Mm-hmm. I was growing, developing to like draw my last breath.
Yeah, yeah. And that's gonna allow you to teach everybody everything you're learning, right? They'd say we teach what, actually I have no idea what the saying is, but you teach your other people what you've learned so that they can skip steps and, you
exactly.
know, learn from your brilliance.
Right. Our story is someone's handbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're supposed to do this. This is why we're here, to serve humanity, to leave this planet better than the way we found it.
Yes. Yes. Well, so, you know, I was telling you earlier that we're launching this platform for women entrepreneurs who are looking to start a digital business.
Yes,
get to that 1.2 billion themselves, because that's what we want. We want all of us to have wealth and be free and empowered. So where does somebody start when they're just starting out and their mindset's kind of like, oh, can I do this? And labels too, right? Like, well, I'm a teacher. I'm this. Or I'm in this business, but I want to do it this way. And that's not the model I've seen. So how do you get in the right mindset to even begin this journey?
It's so funny you ask. So I'm starting a series called Ask PJC. And I was just like, just playing with it last week. And I was getting all these questions. Some of the questions were for people who had experienced foster care. And one of the questions was about imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love this, because it almost speaks to what you're saying, where it's like, my coaching to her was, start where you are, right? Get clear on what you want to teach, to serve. What is the gift, right? And set out a plan. So it's like, there could be so many different things. I got to do this. I got to work on this. Start where you are. Get clear on what your intention is. Get clear on what it is that you want to share with the world. And then share it at a pace. Because here's the thing. I love me some transformational. I got it. I'm this transformational junkie. However, sometimes I don't agree with the whole jump in. That can be scary depending on what the person has to do, right?
Sure.
And so my offer is, share the gift, however it looks like for you. Maybe it is on social media, going into your community and asking for space to do said workshop. Do it at a pace that feels safe for you to be able to actually step into it. Once you do that, it's your gift. So it's your jam. It's not going to feel like work. Once you feel like you're build the confidence, hone in on the craft, perfect it. And when I say perfect it, do it, like hone in on it and make it grow it, right? Make it the best as it's growing, and then stretch.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
In the beginning, have grace and compassion and move at a pace that feels comfortable to you. Because here's the thing, you're jumping and jumping and jump in. People who do that sometimes, they're gonna jump out. We don't want that. We need you, right?
Yes.
Peace, ease, and grace, like one of my mentors taught me. Do it. Maybe write down three different things you want to do. When things come up, these beliefs, write it down. Awareness is a sexy ass thing. When something is coming up, some type of belief from the past, write it down, right? Write it down. I like to do this thing called conscious writing. Meditate on it. When you meditate on it, after you've meditated on it, take out the journal and just start writing. Like your higher self will just start spitting out stuff around that. See what comes up, right? And no judgment, right? No beat up. This is where I'm at. This is what I get to do. This is what I'm creating. Build community, right? Get your badass female friend entrepreneurs to support you. How do we do this? Whether it's like a call, a mastermind, whatever it is, support. I've learned we're not supposed to do this alone. We can't.
No,
We're not supposed to. One
absolutely
of the
not.
one of my lessons last year, Spirit was trying to hone in on me, was surrender and receiving. Receiving was a big deal because I mean I'm always giving, right? Where the lesson was receive, be open to, and it was so uncomfortable because of my past. And I had to, that was one of the things that I had to work through. It was part of my work last year, where it's like, all right, you want to be worth $1.2 billion to make this impact. I'm gonna have to receive some support around that. It's like, oh God, I can't do that by myself. I didn't realize that.
Right. In taking on a certain mindset, do you find, because I've been playing with this lately, I will change my outfit. I will change physically in order to kind of get myself to this place. Almost like a fake it till you make it thing, where if I'm feeling like this imposter syndrome and taking on this new role, what can I do to make myself feel more that person, whether it be changing my title on Instagram or like owning that in every way possible, physically, mentally, spiritually? Have you experienced that as well?
Oh, absolutely. So in the beginning of that coaching clip, Ask PJC, I said how I had struggled with imposter syndrome at one point. And then I realized I was like, fuck imposter syndrome.
Yes.
I had to get to a point where I was like, I'm unsubscribing to the labels of society. I have a gift. Now, I was very insecure at the time. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, I have a gift and I'm going to show up. And at the time, showing up looked like doing these videos, right? Then it led to like Wisdom Wednesdays, which I'm contemplating whether I'm bringing it back or not. But the point is, I started and didn't subscribe to the labels of society and worked on myself, my worthiness, my confidence, right? If I showed you my first YouTube video, it's like, oh, that's you. Yeah, it's horrible. I was like, oh, I am.
But you
Yeah,
did
like
it,
I was,
and
right,
it's still up.
exactly. You're like you do it anyway.
Yes.
And to speak to the fake it till you make it, I don't subscribe to that because here's the thing: I feel like I'm in a space now where it's honor your truth, be where
Yeah.
you're at, right? And so, whatever your truth is in this moment, it's enough. It is enough where you are in this moment, whatever that looks like, as you are continuing to step into the vision, to share the gifts, to grow this business. I don't subscribe to the fake it till you make it because you're not honoring truth in that moment.
Yeah.
And truth is so powerful all the time and will support you in creation.
Maybe it's own it while you're making it.
Absolutely.
That's a
Absolutely. And
better term.
do whatever makes you feel good, right?
Yeah.
Working. Like, I love boxing. I love salsa dancing. It's very important to making that time for self-care and for joy and fun, because that's only going to raise your vibration and support the vision that you're looking to create.
Yeah. I've gone through a lot of different transformational points in my life, and that I physically look different each time. And it's funny because originally, maybe the first couple times I've done it, there was a lot of like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I'm this now, or I'm because people question you. Well, that's not you. What are you? Why are you doing that? And now I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't even care. Like, this is how I'm showing up today. Love me or leave me. It's fine.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, listen, how can people get in touch with you? We have this beautiful community of women entrepreneurs who you got to start with mindset in order to build your beautiful dreams. So where can people connect with you?
So I am on Instagram, Pamela J. Campbell. Also, like I said, I'm doing this Ask PJC series. If somebody has a question and want coaching, I would love to support you. So you can feel free to email me at contactme@pamelajcampbell.com. And anyone that wants to know a little bit more about my story, I did this amazing video, Soft White Underbelly, YouTube. So my video is Perseverance and Strength, Pam.
I'll link that too. I just can't thank you enough. I'm so happy that we were divinely connected. And
thank you so much.
I can't wait to see where you're going to go next.